Life often feels like we're walking around in circles, going through our routines, reacting to the same things, being upset by the same people, and getting frustrated with ourselves, all the while longing for it to be different. Albert Einstein said that the very definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different outcome, much like walking in circles. This last chapter of John offers us another way. It is quite mysteriously a second ending to the Gospel of John, and perhaps it is a second chance, especially for Peter. You see, Simon Peter, as he's characterized in the Gospel of John, is written as one who passes round the same way often, walking round and round, reacting the same way, revisiting similar situations, and we shake our heads and we ask, "Peter, Peter, will you ever change?" For in this text, he is once again fishing. He is once again impulsive in his desire to get into the water, to be with Jesus. He's once again seated around a charcoal fire, being asked three questions. Each moment of today's story hearkens to a path that Peter had walked before. A circular movement back again. And the invitation for us is to think about our own perspectives of transformation. Do you and I think it is possible for us to change? Can people change, even incrementally? And can we play a part in each other's moments of restoration and transformation? Well, John 21 is kind of a retrospect. We think that it was written after Peter's martyrdom, after he literally stretched out his hands and died in the way that Jesus had. Peter had been avoiding his death. And now we look back and know that that's the way he had to walk. In many ways, this is a perspective of transformation, not on our own, but in community. Imagine them sitting around this fire, and as the fire crackled, I wonder what was going on for Peter. I wonder if the memory of Jesus' arrest and trial was circling in his mind. Where did he get that moment of courage to chop off the Roman soldier's ear? And what about his complete wimpiness before three female servants in the courtyard later that night, around another fire? "No, I do not know Jesus," he had said, not once, not twice, but three times. And now on this beach, he sits in silence, surrounded by his friends and in the company of Christ, remembering how he had let Jesus down. I wonder if Peter had talked about it with his friends. I wonder if anyone had had that conversation. I wonder if he sat with an image of himself as shifting sand instead of the rock that he was aspiring to be. So I want to pause here for just a moment and reflect on our processes in our community that often keeps us locked in moments of shame or embarrassment. According to shame researchers, it is this intensely painful feeling when we believe we are unworthy or flawed, unworthy of acceptance or belonging, when we keep being reminded of things we have done wrong. And just like Peter, shame is triggered when we have a new experience that resonates with an old wound. Just this past week, I was at UBC teaching, and a student came up after the class, and the way he said it made me feel like I was being disrespected. And inside, I noticed the anger rise. That level of internal heat was cranking up. And I thought to myself, is this midlife or am I angry? But the heat didn't go down. And instead, it got quite inflamed. And in that moment, it was not the student that was in front of me, but it was a memory of being disrespected by a male teacher as a young girl in patriarchal South Africa. And that situation was being inflamed by what was in front of me. Woundedness comes from people we trust, often people who are closest to us. And for many, the church can be that place of wounding, because we come here vulnerable, seeking gentle restoration, and it's not always what we find. Because communities can foster shame, for we have long memories here. And the most common way we do this is by talking about each other instead of to each other. When we talk about each other, we caricature each other. You know those great pictures of people where they highlight the big nose and the mole and the loopy ears? We overemphasize each other's flaws, and the more we talk about it, the more the flaws grow and grow. And we get into a routine of doing this, and it gives us a false sense of comfort. But deep inside, we are experiencing the inflammation of another wound that we need to pay attention to. My friends at St. Catherine's, shame-inducing conversations where we recount the flaws of others are not helpful. The rut of telling stories over and over during coffee hour, at choir practice, Wednesday Bible studies is harmful. Sometimes we do need another person's perspective. And there are better ways to do that. We can sit one-on-one with a trusted companion and wrestle the situation out with the intent to gain clarity on how to approach the person directly. For that's the kind of community I want to be a part of, where I come to you and you come to me. And to each other. We know when we're caught in a shame cycle, when the inflammation is growing, when we find ourselves in circles. The patterns of going around the same incident over and over again. But here, sitting around the charcoal fire, Peter sits bravely. And the risen Christ addresses him gently and directly. It must have been one of those uncomfortable moments. It would have been easier for Jesus just to speak about Peter to the other disciples, but he doesn't. It would have been easier to take the angry parent role and blame Peter for his fear and three denials, but he doesn't. Instead, Christ invites Peter to reaffirm their relationship. Do you love me? This love was born out of friendship and divine wisdom. Yes, said Peter, you know that I love you. And then Christ, in front of all Peter's friends, entrusts the community role, this authority role, back to Peter. And he gives him responsibility publicly. Feed my sheep. Feed my lambs. I trust you, Peter. Even after what he did, I trust you.
And Christ also trusts us to offer restoration to each other, to nurture the possibility of transformation in this community. I wonder if instead of thinking about walking around in circles, and with this I close, we can think about life as walking a labyrinth. How many of you have tried or walked a labyrinth before? I see. A labyrinth is this winding maze that leads from the outer edge towards the center, round and round and round. It's circular, but it's not a circle. For when I walk a labyrinth, I come to almost the same place, 4 or 5 times on my way to the center, and again 4 or 5 times on my way out. But it's almost the same place, but not quite. And if I am paying attention, I realize that each time I've actually moved. And with each return to that place, I am positioned slightly differently, and I am invited to make a different choice. I believe change is possible. I am a witness to my own and to others. Let us be companions on this journey as we offer opportunities of restoration along the way. It is slow, it is intentional, and it is possible. No matter how many times we get drawn into the old patterns, the risen Christ in and among us offers us new moments to begin again. May it be so. Amen.